In the matter of Teresa Mullen, JSC, may we please have appearances?
Michelle Michaelberg, Deputy Attorney General. On behalf of the state, with me here today is Assistant Attorney General Jean Riley.
Teresa Mullen, appearing pro se.
Ms. Michaelberg.
Thank you, Justices. May it please the Court. The state will be brief, but does request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. We are here because Teresa Mullen, the respondent, flagrantly, repeatedly, and unapologetically breached the rules governing her esteemed profession. While the record is voluminous, the facts are quite simple, but nonetheless compelling. First, respondent violated the code of judicial conduct when she was convicted of defiant trespass, a conviction which has withstood a motion for reconsideration, an appellate remand, a subsequent appeal, and a petition for certification, a conviction which is now given conclusive effect. Second, respondent's pervasive dishonesty before Judge Rivas during her defiant trespass trial, dishonesty that is inextricably intertwined with her conviction, and her lack of candor before the Advisory Committee on Judicial Conduct reflected adversely on her honesty and fitness to serve as a judge. Third, respondent obstructed the discovery process during a litigation her husband had filed against St. Teresa's Parochial School and the Archdiocese of Newark. Indeed, respondent's husband was ultimately sanctioned for their obstructions. Moreover, respondent's behavior during the pendency of that case, which included failing to attend court-ordered depositions and hostile exchanges with an adversary over her use of a cell phone during two depositions, failed to conform to the high standard expected of judges. And fourth, respondent repeatedly abused her judicial office to secure preferential treatment during the Phillips versus Archdiocese matter. After a multi-day hearing in 2019, the Advisory Committee on Judicial Conduct found that each of the four counts in their complaint had been proven by clear and convincing evidence. Similarly, but by an even greater standard of proof, the special panel appointed by this court found beyond a reasonable doubt that respondent's misconduct necessitates removal from office. As I noted at the outset, this case isn't complicated. In fact, it can be reduced to three words: disregard, disdain, and deflection. Respondent has disregarded the law, both the criminal code and the judicial code of conduct. She has shown disdain not only towards her adversaries, but the judiciary, the very institution of which she has sought to remain a member, and at every turn deflects responsibility for her breaches onto everyone else. Respondent has neither shown remorse for her actions nor even acknowledged them. For those reasons, the state requests or agrees with the panel's ultimate disciplinary recommendation and respectfully requests that this court remove respondent for the reasons given in that report, as well as for those articulated in the state's May 17, 2022 post-hearing brief and the October 7th submission addressing the report. The people of New Jersey deserve better, as does the judiciary. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add at this point?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Thank you. Judge Mullen. Judge, we're ready for you when you're ready. Please step to the side.
One moment, please. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. It will be 5 years tomorrow since Judge Rivas published his opinion convicting me of defiant trespass beyond a reasonable doubt. 5 years ago tomorrow, that the lies contained in his opinion that have ruined my personal and professional reputation remain in the public eye. In 5 years tomorrow, that not one law enforcement official or judge has come forward and corrected the record. Not one. And it has been almost 6 years since ethics charges have been filed against me, not because of my conduct on the bench where I served for 7 years and didn't get reappointed, presumably because of these ethics charges that are still pending, but because of a wrongful conviction, a false narrative, and an ethics investigator who charged me with something that I did not say, who misled Judge Kessler in a recorded interview. And I'm the one who is branded a liar. I have been defamed, maligned, called horrible names more than 6 years. I was just expressed to this court that I have disregard for the law, I have disdain, I have deflected, I disdain for my adversary. I didn't have any adversary in this matter. I testified as a fact witness at a deposition. And I completed the oral argument request form and returned it to the clerk of the court, requesting more than an hour for argument. I received a message from her that only 30 minutes are allowed unless the court has questions. And only a 5-minute interrupted statement is allowed, uninterrupted, excuse me. That's less than 1 minute for me to address each year of the false narrative that has been cruelly placed in the public domain about me and not corrected. In addition, as the court knows, I have a motion pending because the May 3rd hearing of the special panel that took place without my participation, which I will address separately in a moment. I could easily speak for over an hour about the 27-page submission on December 20th, 2022 to this court by the Attorney General's office, which not only repeats lies, but contains additional false information. She had the last word, and yet my career is the one who's decimated. My career is the one that has been completely destroyed. And there's been no accountability 5-6 years later. In that brief, if I might briefly touch on it, she criticizes me, and the Attorney General's office just criticized me again for disputing the findings against me, for speaking out, for defending myself. In the brief, she says that since I disputed these findings, I have no business being a judge and the public needs to be protected for me, just as was said before this panel a few moments ago, before this court. In her mind, I must be silenced and I must be punished for actually coming before this court and coming before prior courts to say what has been said is not true. Can you correct the record? And yet none of this record has been corrected. I have every right to stand here before this court in every court that I've been before prior to defend myself. We live in a nation of a democracy, not a dictatorship, and I have every right to defend myself from the lies. When I served on the bench, I was told numerous times, with great power comes great responsibility, and I agree with that. And this system is designed to publish its findings and make these findings published to the public. It wasn't always that way, but every step of the way, the system is designed. Judge Rivas's opinion. Subsequent to that, there was the opinion of the ACJC. Then there was the opinion of the 3-judge panel, and then ultimately there's going to be an opinion from this court. And these opinions will remain in the public domain forever. And I would argue before this court that that means that there's an extra, even greater duty, not an extra duty, an even greater duty to make sure that the record is clear, that the facts are clear. And that has not happened. I'd also argue that when you repeat a lie in a brief, repeat a lie in a court opinion, or refuse to correct a lie, that is still considered lying. The state just stood up here a few minutes ago and said my pervasive dishonesty. I would interpret that as Judge Rivas found that I was lying repeatedly in his opinion, but he didn't find that. What Judge Rivas said is he found me incredible because I denied having a conversation with a police officer who did not arrest me on that day. What Judge Rivas also said in his opinion is that I used the word handcuffs. I was walking around threatening everybody with, oh, I won't leave unless you arrest me and put me in handcuffs. And part of Judge Rivas's opinion says, well, the reason he knew that that was true and that everybody who testified against me is because the word handcuffs was in my recorded tape. It's not there. There's 3 minutes reserved for rebuttal. I would ask the Attorney General to point out to this court exactly where did I ever use the word handcuffs. That has been in the public domain to try to make me look like I was a raving lunatic and completely unprofessional and improper on February 2nd, 2017, and nothing could be further than the truth. The court has the verbal recordings. The court, if they listen, I'm going to accept the fact that the court has already listened to these tapes. The Attorney General certainly has. Where, when my husband returned, and I'm not saying this to disparage my husband in any way, when my husband returned to the school that day, he started personally insulting some of the clergy, and I told him to stop. And I said, stop it, exactly like that. And you can hear what I said. Down the street, I admonished him for behaving that way. I said, this is not how I wanted that to go. You can hear the entire conversation I had with the complainant in this matter, and I'm talking to him in the tone that I'm using right now. Right now. I was invited into that school, and then I was told repeatedly to wait until my husband came back, and I did. And if nothing else is telling before this court, logic would dictate, if they expected me to leave that day before my husband returned, why did every single member of the clergy, with the exception of the school principal and the police, all stand on the front step with me while my children were inside? You can hear on that recording. I say, go inside, the police say, go inside and get the children after my husband and the clergy are getting really into some language that I didn't consider appropriate. And they say, get the children. Well, if I went back inside, would I have been charged with trespass to get my children? I mean, it is so logical. It is, I cannot fathom how none of that is in the court's opinion. None of it. And the lies that there was two meetings. If you look at the recordings, there's one meeting. The lie that I said the word handcuffs. Completely false. And what's missing from that opinion? The 7 to 9 times that I was repeatedly told to stay and wait till my husband comes back. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can just listen to the recordings. Twice, I said I wasn't there to make a scene. I never raised my voice in the hallway. As a matter of fact, when my husband went back to pick up my, to take my son to school, the first thing that was said to me on that tape is, we are ready for you and the children. I was told that they were going to see me and the children initially in the office. That was after having been on the premises for about 20 minutes, standing inside in the hallway being guarded by a police officer. Again, the tape speaks for itself. None of that is in the opinion. Then I have the conversation with Father Joe, who asks me how my son is doing, tells me my daughter gives a good answer in class. And then I'm called in the office surrounded by police officers with guns and 3 members of the clergy. And you know what I'm told? We requested that you remove your children. And since you deny that request, we're expelling them. This is a statement given to us by our lawyers, by our lawyers. And I responded. I asked some questions. The meeting in the office lasted maybe 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes. I'd already been on the premises at that point, over 30. And how that ended, they asked me to leave the room. Well, and we are sure you are welcome to stay until your husband comes back. We need to call our attorney. Why is none of that in the opinion? Why are the 7 to 9 times that I'm asked to stay not in the opinion?
But Judge Mullen, you talk about the times you were told to stay and wait for your husband to come back. But isn't it true that immediately preceding that, after the statement from the Archdiocese was read to you, indicating your children had now been expelled and that you should leave the premises immediately, you said numerous times, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. Unless there's a court order, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. And the references to let's wait for your husband refer back to your statement that you didn't sign anything. When the discussion was with regard to the handbook and the policy that you signed, you made it very clear, I didn't sign anything, my husband signed it, and that's when the statements were made, well, okay, let's wait for your husband to come back. Isn't that how it transpired? Your brief doesn't have the portion where you said, I'm not leaving, but it does have the portion where you were told, well, let's wait for your husband. Again, after you made it very clear you weren't leaving and you didn't sign anything, that was your husband, he went to drop your son off and he'll be back.
I agree with part of that characterization. When I was first read that statement, That's what I said because I was told that I signed this statement, and I said I didn't sign the statement. And then I agree with you that then it transpired into, well, we'll wait for him to come back. I agree with that. I did also say in that that I need to go to work. So I did say initially when that statement was read, I agree with your characterization. And then subsequently, that's what transpired. So I do agree with that. In addition, the Attorney General has argued before this court that the failure of this court to accept the petition for certification, the failure of the appellate division to reverse the trial court's decision, means that everything's conclusive. I argued before this court back in September of 2021 that, in essence, before the ACJC panel, I had to try this criminal trespass again. And I said, well, that's twice. The testimony was different at the time of the ACJC hearing. And then I'm told by the special panel, well, you don't get a hearing on that. That was conclusive. My understanding of the law is the record needs to be looked at de novo. The panel did not want to wait, meaning the ACJC panel did not want to wait until the criminal conviction went through the court system. And it decided that it was going to hear from these witnesses all over again. I never responded to the special panel's rejection that I was permitted to have the matter tried over again, because that's when I was diagnosed with shingles. Words matter, and the truth matters. Details matter, and integrity matters. And I would argue that my mental, physical, and emotional well-being matters. I was diagnosed with shingles on March 9th of 2022. I provided proof of that. I gave the court updates. I explained how I was feeling. Yet the special panel had the hearing without me. And what happened during that hearing? Not only was it more of the same, where insulting remarks were made about me, things that were said weren't true. And with every hearing and every proceeding, the ante is upped over and over and over again. I'm insulted, I'm disparaged, false statements made. When is enough enough? And that's what I said to this court. Mr. Westrick was asked to testify at this May 3rd hearing that the special panel had without me. Mr. Westrick, who represents the Archdiocese of Newark and St. Teresa's School in the litigation that continues to be ongoing with my family. Mr. Westrick told the special panel that I was basically stomping around in the courtroom, behaving inappropriately. He never raised that to Judge Kessler, and I wasn't even there to defend myself. And I wasn't even there. I supplied to this court smart. I was on the bench in my courtroom, yet he distinctly remembered me carrying on, distinctly remembered me acting that way. Why do you use the word distinctly? When you want to tell somebody, I am definitely telling the truth, because I have such a recollection in my head that that must have occurred. But it didn't occur, because I was on the bench. And in the brief, what's the Attorney General's reason, who's called me a pervasive liar? No, Mr. Westrick didn't lie, but even if he did, I mean, that doesn't mean he falsely testified about everything. Really, really. He gets to go to the court and say all these things about me, that I'm stomping around and acting professional. To what end? To what end? Why would I go in another judge's courtroom and act professional in any manner whatsoever? Which gets me to another point, which was also raised by the Attorney General in the December 20th brief. Judge Rivas called me combative. He called me belligerent. Where? I would like the Attorney General to point in the record where that is. And this court can listen to court smart, which I've repeatedly asked. I never acted belligerent. I never acted combative. It's the female tropes of the nasty woman over and over and over again. And what's interesting is if you read the record, you heard how I spoke to Father Joe. Deacon Joe, during the hearing, he testified about how I was always polite to him. I never cursed. I never used a foul word on February 2nd. I never used a foul word to anybody at on the clergy and to the police. I never disparaged anybody, yet I continue to be disparaged over and over and over again. And there's absolutely no concern by anybody that I have seen so far in the judiciary about this. And how did this all start? It all started because I was at a mother Sundance and saw a picture of a gun, a gun. That's what these streets will do to you out there. That a teenager sent another teenager who is my son's classmate, a girl. And when I asked my daughter about that, she was telling me about some sexual harassment that was going on in the school. It's all in the record. It's all in my answer. None, not one thing is in any of these opinions about a child who was bullied. And you know when anyone reacts when a child's bullied? When something horrible and awful happens. When someone is in a hospital, when someone is no longer living. One needs to just look at the news in the last couple of weeks. What happens? There's only a call to action. When something happens, when a bully, when someone is bullied so badly, cyberbullied, that they have feelings or they actually do take their own life, right? There's a hearing this week about that. How do you think an 11, 12, 13-year-old child felt be calling a monkey dick, a piece of shit, by adults and by adults who participated in this conversation at her school, teachers? What about a petition that calls a young child jealous and intolerant that is signed by police officers in the town and by the police chief's wife? And this is stuff that has been brought before panel after panel after panel. And not one thing is contained in any of those opinions. How do you think my child felt? How do you think my children felt? And how do you think I feel constantly reading these horrible things about me that there's absolutely no basis in fact about, that no one will stand up here and correct? How do you think I feel reading these opinions, the latest opinion, where the three-judge panel makes it seem that, you know, I wasn't really sick? This court adjourned this matter for 41 days. This matter was supposed to be heard in January with no reason whatsoever. And I am not arguing that you're not entitled to do that. I couldn't even get an adjournment to go to the doctor when I provided an upcoming medical appointment. I told them I couldn't hear. I told them my ear was crackling. I had two nerves in my brain that was swollen. I provided proof. And now I have to tell my medical diagnosis to the world because that they decided to publish an opinion on August 23rd of 2022 after hearing without me on May 3rd. So they knew I had shingles. They knew I had post-herpetic neuralgia, which could last weeks and months. What does the Attorney General say about that in their current brief? Well, I mean, she didn't give enough information. Enough information? I have been practicing law now, this will be my 30th year at the end of the year. Not once did I have to, when I was asking for an adjournment or asking for an adjournment on behalf of a client, or quite frankly, when litigants or attorneys appeared before me asking for an adjournment, did I say to them, well, let me have an expert witness report. It should have been enough that I reported in excruciating detail just how badly I was feeling. And it should have been enough that I provided diagnoses. No. What was said? Well, fill out an ADA form and five people could call any of my medical providers on their own, ex parte, without me ever knowing what would happen. Because I was asking for an accommodation. I wasn't asking for an ADA accommodation. I was asking to recover. And there's published appellate division case law from 2020, right on point, where an attorney told a judge that she wasn't feeling well, who had just gotten out of the hospital, and she tried the case anyway. And it was appealed. ZS is the case, not mentioned, not even addressed at all in the Attorney General's December 20th, 2022 brief. Did anyone think for one moment I'm the judge that that handled over 1,000 more cases than anybody else in the family division since COVID. I'm the person who fell down the stairs and still went to work. I'm the person who went to work when my husband came within 24 hours of dying. And I asked for an adjournment because I'm sick, because I can't even think straight. Provide medical objective evidence, and that couldn't even be granted. couldn't even go back to the doctors on May 13th. What would have been the harm? There was no urgency. I didn't get reappointed. I'm no longer on the bench. But no, even though case law says it, and I've said from the beginning, there's one set of rules for everybody, and then there's another set of rules for me. Anybody else would have been given an adjournment. Not me. And I kept that three-judge panel updated every time I went to the doctor. And don't you know, I was diagnosed not only with shingles, but with Ramsey-Hunt syndrome, what Justin Bieber had on June 1st. I have permanent hearing, well, what, still permanent right now, maybe in the future it'll get better. But as of right now, I have permanent hearing loss. I had facial paralysis. I had shingles on my face. I provided this court pictures. I couldn't even open one of my eyes. Yet I had to come to the hearing, right? I had to drive 2 hours, 4 hours round trip minimum, and go to a hearing where I said I couldn't even think straight. In Union County, if you ask for an adjournment for any reason right now, you'd probably get an adjournment average 4 months. And I couldn't even get the courtesy of an adjournment. And I wrote, I said, what else do you need? What else do you need? What does the opinion say? It wasn't sufficient. It wasn't sufficient that I had shingles. It wasn't sufficient that I had a COVID test pending. It wasn't sufficient that I said I couldn't hear correctly. It wasn't sufficient that the nerves in my brain were swollen. It wasn't sufficient that I provided them with the post-herpetic neuralgia diagnosis. It wasn't sufficient. What would have been sufficient? Absolutely nothing. How many times have I heard when I served on the bench that someone's emotional, physical, and mental well-being is important? But not mine, not mine. How do you think that made me feel? How do you think it makes me feel reading these opinions over and over and over again? And it's that exact type of abusive behavior and bullying that causes people to, that causes people to be in such an emotionally bad state, and in my estimation, it's equivalent to the cyberbullying and the bullying that my child experienced and still experiences, because the petition and all those things, they'll never be gone. We know once everything is on the internet, it never goes away. And you know, again, the pervasive liar that I am argued to be and stated to be, I will repeat again, Judge Rivas found in his opinion that I had a conversation that I denied with the police officer inside the building. What else is missing from that opinion that the actual complainant, because here there's been numerous accounts in the newspaper that I was arrested that day. We all know that I was not arrested that day. Has that ever been changed? Of course not. Could I ever change it? Of course not. Not when I was serving on the bench because I couldn't make any public statements. So now I'm walking around threatening people with handcuffs. I am lying about conversations with police officers. I'm belligerent. I'm combative, right? All of that is in the public domain. Where is it in the public domain that the pastor, my church pastor, who married me, who gave me a blessing when I was sworn in as a judge, who brought a citizen's complaint against me 8 days later on the instruction of his attorneys, agreed and told Judge Rivas that after I was asked to leave the office that day, I went outside and I never went back in the building after Officer Kaverick arrived. Where is that? How could I be convicted by beyond a reasonable doubt when the complainant agrees with me? Agrees with me.
Judge, I'm looking at the clock and I want you to be aware of the time. We're 25 minutes in right now. May I ask you a question?
Sure.
Over the many years that have passed, as you reflect back on what's taken place, is there anything about your conduct, about your behavior, that you regret?
So I've been asked that question by the ECJC panel, and that was noted in the last opinion of the three-judge panel without me, that I've showed absolutely no remorse. And I am not going to stand before this court and say, I Well, I'll go with each charge, I guess, is the easiest way to answer that question. So I was, I went to the school, and everyone seems to be critical of me going to the school that day. Yet the principal of the school testified he expected us to go to the school that day. You know how many times I went to the school during this bullying? I didn't act inappropriate that day. And even the judiciary posts publications that have been in my prior submissions. You know what? When your child's being bullied, you continuously go to the school. I went to the school. I didn't say one inappropriate thing to anybody. I said I wasn't there to make a scene. I yelled at my husband for making a scene. But, you know, looking back, if I didn't go to the school, I wouldn't have been falsely charged with criminal trespass when everyone agrees I left the premises voluntarily. Then I'm charged with lying. I didn't lie. And I said that to this court on September 13th, 2021. I did not lie. And I am going to repeat what I just said 2 minutes ago. The complainant agrees with me. I never went back inside. My children were inside. I went outside. My cell phone records show I made phone calls. I did not want my children to be removed from that school. I did not want my children to be re-victimized. But they were. And they were ultimately told that they could not go back to a school that they loved. Because, as what we see constantly, the victim gets re-victimized. With respect to the depositions, there are so many things that are missing from that history. So with respect to the depositions, Ms. Bauman.
Can I ask you one quick question? Did your children finish that school year?
Yes, because.
You said they never went back to that school or whatever. They did finish that school year. They were readmitted and finished the school year.
The Appellate Division ordered them back in the school first.
A question.
Yes, but they weren't readmitted, technically.
In answer to the Chief's question, is there anything you regret? I think that was the question.
Right. So I was finishing then. There's two charges about the deposition. I listened to the advice of my attorney on the depositions. And we're told that words matter. Judge Kessler used the word limited in repeatedly in orders, repeatedly in not only orders, but in his statements to counsel. I'm not going to go over every single order, but July 14, 2017, 2:43 p.m., the court ordered that discovery in this case be targeted to the limit issues to be decided at the plenary hearing regarding the expulsion of the children. The court does not expect discovery to go beyond the scope of this anticipated hearing. I listened to Ms. McCray, who was present, who had numerous discovery case management orders with Judge Kessler. Judge Kessler found I was entitled to follow the advice of my attorney. I didn't say anything during those depositions, except if she asked me, instructed me not to answer. With respect to the subsequent deposition with Mr. Westrick, I had my cell phone in front of me and in my hand at certain times, as did Mr. Westrick, as did everybody else in that room. My children were home alone. And I keep on getting this question, and it's as if I'm supposed to apologize for trying to protect my children from bullying. I'm supposed to apologize going to the school when the court publishes its own directives that say go to the school. If I acted inappropriately, if I cursed at somebody, if I screamed at somebody, if I called somebody names, I would agree that that would be entirely inappropriate behavior. If I said something inappropriate to Mr. Westrick, certainly I agree that that would be inappropriate, but I didn't. And the last charge, to finish my question, Chief, is that Ms. McCray said something to the court after Judge Kessler is the one who decided that there was supposed to be a private hearing be about questions that I was asked at deposition and about a prior criminal conviction of Father Joe. And that's right in the beginning of the transcript, and that's undisputed. But that's not what Ms. Bauman told Judge Kessler. Ms. Bauman tried to insinuate to Judge Kessler that somehow I requested something. I never said a word to Judge Kessler, as he said in his interview. I never said a word to him at all. I wasn't even present when Ms. McCray made that remark, when Judge Kessler was entertaining a hearing about sanctions. Had I, and then it suggested in the court's opinions that I should have interrupted a judge. I would have never presumed to interrupt any judge during a court hearing about what was said. I was not a party to that case. I was a fact witness. Not to mention the fact that I wasn't even present when any of that was said. I would never presume if a judge told me to do something in a courtroom not to do it. And I've never done that in my entire 30-year career. And if I was on the bench and I asked somebody to do something, I don't know how else to answer that. I never, ever, I would have been brought up, it's a catch-22. I would have been brought up on charges if I somehow interjected in any proceeding involving Judge Kessler. But I didn't. I never said a word to Judge Kessler. And I never said a word to anybody, unless I was under oath or unless I was asked a question. So basically, I'm being judged for being a parent, at least with respect to going to school that day. I always went to the school. You know how many meetings I had with the school? Other parents had meetings with the school, letters that were written to the school, meetings at the rectory, meetings at the church. The own principal said they expected us to go to the school that day. And I made the recording. You want me to say I'm sorry for trying to protect my children? And I'm not sorry for trying to protect my children. I'm not. And if I, again, and I it's going to be said again, that I'm, what am I supposed to show remorse for? I'm supposed to show remorse when I, because I wanted my children to stay in that school. I'm supposed to show remorse because I listened to the advice of my attorney. I never said a cruel, inappropriate word to anybody. Not one person, not the police, not anybody from the clergy, ever, ever. I never went on Facebook and called children monkey dicks. I never did any of those things. And I listened to Ms. McCray. She was, not only is she my friend, but she's providing counsel in the case. And the fact that I said to Mr. Westrick, I answered the question, I'll let you know if I need a break. How is that inappropriate? If I said to him, who are you to talk to me like that? Yeah, that would be entirely inappropriate. What words did I say to anybody that insulted anybody, that demeaned anybody? And I have been demeaned consistently. Pervasive liar, disdain for the court. I deflect. What am I deflecting? I would like the Attorney General to stand up and see, again, where was I combative? Where was I belligerent? I have a voice. I'm allowed to use my voice. We're told you're allowed to use your voice. You're allowed to dispute things. And I've done that. And back to words matter. Ms. McCray, every time she rendered an objection, she quoted Rule 410, which has the word limited. Judge Kessler used the word limited repeatedly. His law clerk used the word limited repeatedly. So words only matter when I'm standing here saying them, but words don't matter when anybody else is saying them, right? Because Judge Kessler said limited about 10 times. If that wasn't his intent, that wasn't his intent. How is Mr. McCray supposed to know that? And I wasn't even present for those conferences. In the May 3rd, 2022 opinion, the panel says, oh, well, we said no more adjournments, but that's really tongue in cheek. We really didn't mean it. Really? So if a judge says something and they really don't mean it, that's okay, right? But somehow I'm a pervasive liar. I mean, the whole thing makes me sick to my stomach. And just the stress alone of the repeated lies and the name calling, is, I'm at a loss for words. And I served 7 years on the bench. 7 years. I had a completely unblemished legal career and a judicial career. But when there's only me and there's three clergy members and three police officers, who else? You know how, if I had a dollar for every time I heard, well, those six people tested consistently, but they didn't. But they certainly testified to key points meant to get me to back off, make me to be silent. And I'm not going to be silent when my child is threatened with a knife, with a gun, called a monkey dick. I'm not going to be silent. I'm going to go to the school. I'm going to try to talk to people and try to work things out. And if anyone needed any evidence of that, I completely yelled at my husband in front of everybody else, to their side, and in private. I didn't even know that conversation was recorded by him. And I still said, don't act that way. Don't act that way. And I was invited into the school and said that I was going to be in the office. They would hear me momentarily. That's not how it worked out. Okay? I was there over 30 minutes before they even let me in the office for about a 7-minute conversation. And after that, as I said, I went outside. And the justice is corrupt. I was shocked. Your children are now expelled because you won't remove them from the school. They're the victims, but no, they have to leave. But the perpetrators get to stay. And I said, what? I pay tuition here. What? I'm not leaving. And then I thought, and then the response was, well, you signed this handbook, which is correct. And then I thought better of it. And I said, well, I didn't sign that handbook. And then that went on to, well, stay till your husband gets home. You're right. Stay. I'm sure you're going to want to hear what we say to your husband. I'm sure you're going to want to stay. You're welcome to stay. Stay, 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 stay. I was never once asked to leave after that. That's not what the opinion says.
We're beyond the half hour at this point. I wanted to ask you to try to draw your argument to a close.
Court in appointing this special panel is supposed to look at the record de novo. And certainly the case law does not support the fact that they had a hearing without me. I've asked this court to set that aside. I've already asked previously for the charges against me to be dismissed, but again, I don't know how many times I can ask for the same thing. I know in this forum that's not going to be granted. However, I am asking, under the circumstances and the fact that I was so gravely ill, to let that hearing take place with a new panel. Now, I just want to bring to the court's attention fact, as I've already said, that there's case law right on point. In which an adjournment should have been granted. And how was I prejudiced at that hearing? Because new allegations were made against me. Mr. Wester completely lied to the court. He completely made the whole story up. I certainly know, being a lawyer for a long period of time, that sometimes people exaggerate complaints and personal injury matters, et cetera. But this wasn't an exaggeration. This was a complete lie that is now out there again in the public domain. The last thing I didn't speak about, and I spoke about the last time, and I will end it there, is this release, right? It was discussed extensively at the ACJC hearing. There's ethics rules right on point. You can't perpetrate a fraud on the court. Well, Mr. Westrick certainly did. He told a story, a complete story about something that I wasn't even present for. Father Joe, who's the complainant, testified that he was advised by counsel that no matter what I did on February 2nd, 2017, he was to file a criminal complaint against me. And not one court has found any that problematic at all. And then I'm presented with a release. Hey, if you give up your children's rights and the rights of your husband in a pending litigation, we will pursue the criminal trespass against you. And the ACJC had a copy of that release. It's as if it never happened, because it's not in anywhere in the opinion. And it wasn't Father Joe who was going to sign the release. It was the Archdiocese of Newark and St. Teresa's. There's an ethics rule right on point on that, but no one seems to be concerned about that. Nobody. How many times am I going to come before this court where yet another lie is told, yet another unethical thing is done? Normally, when things like that happen, you go to the police. How could I get any assistance from the police when it's the police who are on a petition, signing a petition that disparages my children, when the police are present at St. Teresa's that day? For what? I didn't act inappropriately. They were already there. They were already there, and the principal said he expected my husband and I to go there. Why were they there? No police reports, all cell phone communication, not one body cam camera. They all testified to handcuffs, not one mention of handcuffs in any police report. The dash cam video does not support what Officer Kavarik said, but none of that is in any opinion because it doesn't matter what I say to this tribunal or any other tribunal in the state of New Jersey. I'm the one who's at fault. I'm the one who's supposed to say I'm sorry. I'm the one who came forward with pictures of a gun when a child was threatened with a gun, and then when my own child was threatened with a gun and a knife. And what happened? They had to leave the school. What happened? Ethics charges are brought against me, even though all the experts and even this own court says, show up, use your voice. And that's exactly what I did. There have been repeated lies told in this matter, but I'm not the one who is the liar. And yet, any time a lie has been presented to this court or to the Attorney General or to the Middlesex County Prosecutor's Office, it's either ignored, swept under the rug, and not mentioned at all. Yet I've been taken to task for a lie that could not possibly have happened. It could not possibly have happened. By Officer Kavarik's own testimony, if this court looked at the record de novo, I wouldn't have even been inside of the school at that time based on the recordings. Not to mention the fact that the complainant himself said I never went back after the officer arrived.
I need to ask you to try to draw your argument to an end now.
Okay. Thanks. On May 3rd, 2022, the opinion against me was 53 pages long. 53 pages that was published without any regard for my emotional, physical, or mental well-being. I asked this court to let me have a hearing when I was well enough to have a shingle shot. I have had that shingle shot, and in this system of justice, litigants are entitled to due process. I got no due process, and then the more lies go unchecked, the more people do it with impunity. And I am asking this court for a chance to correct the record, to put on a defense, so my name can be cleared. It's my professional and personal reputation that has been destroyed through the repeated lies and the repeated demeaning behavior and the repeated accusations against me. And when I stand up for myself, what do I hear? She has no regard for the law. She has, she has disdain for the court system. I do at this time. Not everybody in the court system. But when you perpetuate a lie or you tell a lie, you're supposed to be held accountable. That's all that's been said about me. And that there's been no accountability. I ask that I have an opportunity to defend myself. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just briefly. Ms. Mullen opens her argument to the court and throughout her argument attempts to go behind the conviction for defiant trespass. But as the panel already found in February of 2022, she's collaterally estopped from challenging that conviction. It was fully litigated and finally determined all five elements of collateral estoppel have been satisfied. And notably, Ms. Mullen did not challenge the February 2022 order. And as the line of case law indicates from Carusi, Collister, and Imbriani, collateral estoppel is applicable to judicial removal actions, and such is the case here. And I'll just only address one aspect of her arguments regarding the criminal conviction with respect to the facts underlying that.
Ms. Mullen argues that the entire interaction was recorded. In fact, it was not recorded. There are more than 30 minutes of that interaction that are not captured by any cell phone recording that day. So we don't know what occurred during those 30 minutes, but we do have testimony from clergy members and police officers indicating about what occurred. With respect to Ms. Mullen's arguments regarding the adjournment request, the panel went above and beyond, in fact, bending over backwards to accommodate Ms. Mullen when she had indicated that she was suffering from an ailment, and had extended the deadline for submissions of written reports 6 times, and then were willing to entertain a further adjournment, potentially an indefinite adjournment of the hearing. But she failed to provide particularized health information to allow the court to make a determination about when an adjournment could be scheduled. And as she concedes today, she refused to sign the ADA accommodation form, which they didn't require her to sign. They offered her to sign or to provide particularized health information, neither of which she did.
I don't want to discuss the particular medical evidence, but
yes.
Is there anything in addition to the 2 prescription blanks, the sentence on each of those, one dated March 23rd, December 22nd, and one dated April 6th, December 22nd?
Your Honor,
in addition that was presented?
Sure. Your Honor, I do not believe so, but because that information was sheltered from the state, we only learned about those documents when we came to court on May 3rd, because her information was being protected as it was pertained to her health. But it was our understanding from the panel's representations that it was the 2 prescription pad pages and appointment cards. And notably, the prescription pad pages, I believe, indicated that she was able to return to work on April 18th of 2022. The hearing was not until May 3rd. So it was the panel's understanding and our understanding when we got there that day that she was able to move forward according to whatever medical information she did provide. With respect to Ms. Mullen's representation and an argument she has made throughout these disciplinary proceedings that the scope of the deposition was limited, Judge Kessler couldn't have been clearer. In AG 16, he said, he adamantly asserted, there is not one single order in which I limited what could be asked at the depositions. He goes on, I never anywhere said that they should not answer questions about their direct case. Goes on, there's nothing in the order to even remotely suggest that the intention was to limit the scope of the deposition. Rather, it was just limited to the defense at the time of trial. And there are additional quotations, and those are all in the Attorney General's December 20th brief, pages 8 through 9. And again, as I noted, that's AG 16, where Judge Kessler goes on an extensive defense of the fact that he never had limited the scope of the depositions. With respect to the general release, Ms. Mullen has argued this point previously. And it's notable that none of the reviewing courts who have considered the conviction, and as I noted, there was an appeal, there was a remand, there was a subsequent appeal, there was a petition for certification to this court, found the general release probative, relevant at all, or exculpatory. So it has no value. In addition to the fact that it was not executed, and it was Ms. Mullen's attorney who was pressing for the release, a release that was supposed to be releasing a potential malicious prosecution charge against the Archdiocese. I have nothing further. If the court has any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, counsel.
Okay.
Judge Mullen, there's a lot at stake here today. So if you would like the opportunity to respond to what was just said on rebuttal,
I would.
You'll have a few moments, please. And I'd ask you to try to keep your presentation to about the length that we just heard. No more than 5 minutes, please.
I will. Can you just give me one moment?
Yes.
Chief.
I took some notes. I'm going to try to limit it just to the remarks that were just made. I did not challenge the February 20th, 22 order. I advised the court that I intended to file a motion for reconsideration, and then I got sick with shingles, which I've already represented to this court and represented to the other court. I had every intention of challenging that. This court, when it entered its order after the September 13th, 2021 hearing, did not restrict the hearing. It just said it was not going to dismiss the charges against me, and I asked for hearing on all four charges. And in fact, I distinctly remember Judge Telsey before this order saying, wouldn't you be entitled to a hearing on the lie? Because there was not, the lie itself was never litigated by the ACJC. The standard there was clear and convincing evidence, but I was denied that, and I did not challenge it because I was sick. I never said that the entire event was recorded. The record speaks for itself. The event from when we arrived to the school up until 8:33 p.m. was recorded, a.m., excuse me, and I said I went outside and made cell phone calls. There's a record of that. And then there's a record when my husband returned to the school, which I've already discussed. There's a record of my husband and I on a street corner, and there's a dash cam record. So to the extent that the Attorney General, or I misspoke, I certainly did not mean to suggest to this court that there is a entire uninterrupted record. The beginning of the record is entirely interrupted, as is the entire office meeting. I did, to your question to the Attorney General, I did present additional information to the court. I provided proof that I went to the doctors. I provided proof of additional COVID tests. I provided proof of the PHN diagnosis because I asked the court, when I said I would not sign the ADA form, I did not want five people ex parte calling my medical providers. And I've already discussed that extensively in my submissions, and I won't go over that again, but I will say that I did. I asked the court what they wanted, and I did provide additional information. I most certainly did. Now, the Attorney General is probably right. I don't think that they would copy it on the last, those type of medical submissions in the beginning. So I do agree that they probably did not see that. I don't remember. I have to go back and look at that specific thing, but I did submit something to the court. I received an email at about 4:41, if I remember correctly, p.m., and they asked for additional information, and I gave them additional information subsequent to that. And then they wrote a decision and said that was not satisfactory. That was the what I discussed earlier, proof of the PHN, proof that I went back to the general practitioner. I had stated that my doctor said I had a follow-up in a week. And then I had that upcoming May 13th, 2022 appointment that I initially asked for. So I did submit additional information.
And is that the reference in the opinion to the May 2nd submissions? Is that what you're referring to? It says in the opinion that on May 2nd, respondent supplied documentation relating to her medical issue. We found the documentation did not establish sufficient cause to postpone the hearing. Is that what you've...
I believe so, because the hearing took place on May 3rd, but I did submit the additional documentation as I summarized. So, and that was medical documentation. And I also asked if I could, what specifically they were looking for in that submission. That submission's in the record, exactly what I said to them.
Thank you.
With the documentation.
Judge,
yes.
The chief mentioned earlier the two prescription blanks. One of those prescription blanks was from your doctor indicating that you were fine to return to work on April 18th, 2022. Did you provide anything further after that indicating from your doctor specific to your condition that you needed more or additional time?
I just provided what my doctor told me. What happened was that's when I was experiencing the hearing loss, and I went back to the doctor, and she told me that I had to report to her the following week. And I explained that in terms of did I get a note saying that I couldn't go back to work. I wasn't working, and I did not. And I at the hearing loss, when I called, the person who diagnosed me with the shingles was my dermatologist. And then I had all these other issues that I won't get into right now that I explained about an increased risk of a heart attack and stroke and all that. I underwent a battery of tests. And when I called the dermatologist with some questions, she referred me to my primary care physician. And it was my primary care physician who I saw about the hearing loss. She tested me for COVID. And then she said, send me an email next week. Tell me if you're better. Keep your dermatology appointment on May 3rd. When I didn't feel better, she sent me to an ENT. I had a brain MRI. I had all these additional tests. That was all subsequent to the May 3rd hearing. So I was supposed to report back to her the week of May 3rd, which I put in my letter. I hope that I'm answering your question. But I did not. That doctor did not give me any kind of prognosis whether or not I could return arguably to work, even though I wasn't working, because she said I had to get back to her that following week about if I was feeling better. And when I wasn't, that's, you know, I was diagnosed with the hearing. I had to see all these specialists, and I went underwent a battery of tests that was diagnosed with facial paralysis, Ramsey-Hunt syndrome, and hearing loss.
Did you want to address anything else?
Yes. I wanted to say that the general release had nothing to do with the malicious prosecution. It was a release drafted by Mr. Westrick's office. That is like 6 pages long. I'm not going to read it all into the record, but it was to release my children's claims, my claims. It was a general release. I don't have to explain the import of a general release. The document speaks for itself. And again, this was a general release presented to me to release the claims in the civil matter in exchange for a dismissal of a criminal prosecution that the citizen's complainant wasn't even going to file. And I've already discussed extensively about the quid pro quo that was discussed. That's inappropriate, unethical, inappropriate, that Judge Rivas allowed on the record. That record speaks for itself. And then the final thing I was going to say is about Judge Kessler, that he used the word limited repeatedly, and he did limit. The case will be targeted to the limited issues to be decided at the plenary hearing regarding the expulsions of the children. The court does not expect discovery to go beyond the scope of that anticipated hearing. In his orders, he said there will be future depositions on other issues. Not to mention the fact his first order only allowed for limited paper discovery demands. That's May 24th, 2017. So, again, this case is fraught with misstatements, misrepresentations, and outright lies. And Judge Kessler repeatedly used the word limited. If he meant something different, maybe he did mean something different. I'm not going to criticize him. All I'm going to say is that that's what he said. Found that Ms. McCray misinterpreted his intentions. If he had different intentions, so be it. We don't always speak as correctly and as properly as we'd like to. And I understand that, and I can see that. But those are the words he used. Limited. And he used them repeatedly. To stand up here and say he didn't use the word limited is just a simple mischaracterization of the record. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court's going to take a brief